Consolazio alongside Sam Saig for episode 12 of Running the Option. Sam, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, but you know, Dave, let's be frank here. Coming into last week's action, we expected a dull week of college football.
We did.
The games on paper didn't look very interesting.
Nope.
And then all of a sudden, college football, in its best Lee Corso voice, just said to us, not so fast, my friend, because we got maybe the best weekend of the year.
As the week's action was unfolding, you have the Friday night upset and then all of Saturday's madness, I kept thinking, this is going to be awesome for the podcast. This is going to be awesome for the podcast. And as it kept happening, I was thinking, oh my God, we're not going to have enough time on the podcast to get to all of this madness. It was a little too much madness for me. I would have been happy with, oh, I don't know, two upsets in the top five or you know, just three upsets in the top seven. No, we got three out of five, four out of seven. Pretty darn incredible.
I mean, it's just one of those weeks that, you know, I didn't see any of it coming, really, starting with the Oklahoma State game and working our way in. I mean, certainly USC, you wanted to think in the back of your head, but for everything to happen the way that it did, just really a stunning week.
I almost thought that there might have been a player or two on USC and Oklahoma that just caught a listen to the podcast last week. Oh, really? USC and Baylor have no chance this week, huh? Well, you know what? Screw your podcast, and you guys aren't experts, and Oklahoma said, we're just going to go out and lose. USC said, we're just going to go out and win, and just throw things to the wind. Let's start on Friday night. The amazing thing about all three of these major upsets, and we'll get to Clemson a little bit, because they don't deserve a total pass for losing to NC State just because all these teams ahead of them lost, but looking at that Friday night game, or I should say looking at all the games, huge streaks were broken.
Oh, okay.
And the one Friday night, of course, Iowa State 0-18 against top two opponents. I think there are a lot of schools that have a record like that. When you're talking about not top five opponents, but top two opponents, those are pristine opponents. It doesn't matter where you're playing, it's going to be tough for a school like Iowa State to knock off any top two program. And this isn't one of those preseason top twos that shouldn't be there. This is Oklahoma State that looked like a lock to, at the very least, obviously get into that Oklahoma game undefeated and probably go into the national championship. What happened?
I mean, you know, I saw a stat that Iowa State coming into that game, 0-56-2 against teams that were sixth or higher. So it's one of those things where if you stretch that statistic out, it's incredible what this win in Ames meant for Iowa State. I mean, Oklahoma State was a 27-point favorite coming into the game. Now, it has to be said, obviously, that they didn't look to have the same fire and energy that you would expect given the tragic events of the day. You hate to make that a part of this, but it certainly was a day that you don't normally expect for any school to have to go through. But even still, for Iowa State to get the breaks that they needed, and there were many breaks that they needed throughout that game, for it all to come together in a perfect way and to win that game after you know, a 24-7 lead by Oklahoma State, it's unbelievable.
That's the thing, and obviously our thoughts go out to the victims of that plane crash. But you look at the fact that Oklahoma State did get out to the big lead. It didn't play out like your everyday upset. It wasn't the type of game, a lot like the USC game, where one team gets off to a huge start and then holds on. Oklahoma State looked like they were just going through the motions of another win. So to have that collapse in the second half was so uncharacteristic of this team. And it really was, as I was watching the game, it really looked every bit like Iowa State was the better team. They were riding the momentum, obviously, but they were making huge stops on defense. They were making timely plays on offense. They turned the ball over late in the game. It looked like everything would be finished. Three and out Oklahoma State, get the ball back. It was just an awesome game for Iowa State. And one of those games where, you know, the average college football fan that didn't see the game might roll their eyes and say, this is what I hate about college football. But if you were watching the game, I give so much credit to Iowa State, more than I blame Oklahoma State, because they just rose to the occasion as well as I've seen a team rise in a long time.
And it's kind of exemplary of Paul Rhodes' teams now, because he's had some signature wins in his three seasons there. This will obviously qualify as the best of them, but he's just one of those coaches that if you saw the post-game celebration in the locker room, he's got those guys juiced to play under him, and they were just so prepared in front of their fans on a primetime game, on a weeknight like that to go out there and make that performance happen. And even still, it's amazing how close Oklahoma State came to winning it after all. But the missed field goal by Quinn Sharp, which the interesting thing is, if you look at that field goal, and we've talked about this throughout the season, especially with the game with Syracuse, but it kind of looked like it went over.
That one was a really tough call.
Really?
That was a really tough call.
You know, I mean, Quinn Sharp, one of the best kickers in the country, and a guy that was only his third miss of the season. But it's funny that I obviously you don't want to take a guy's word for it that is willing it to go in. But he looked so stunned that it missed that you almost do wonder if they would have extended the goalpost, how close it would have come to going in. And that could have been a game winner. But nonetheless, it went into overtime. And from there, the rest was history. But
yeah, I mean, multiple replays. It was so close. Yeah. I lean towards it would have hit the upright and gone wide, but I'm really not sure. And another missed field goal defining the game in the end in that USC-Oregon game.
Amazing. And another streak, 21 straight at Autzen Stadium over. I mean,
USC, and 19 conference wins 19 over.
19 conference wins over. I mean, USC won what essentially would have been a preview of the Pac-12 title game a few weeks. Now, that game, if it was played, if USC was eligible, it would no longer have the meaning for Oregon that it once would have had. But what you have to do in a game like this is start with Matt Barkley in his performance, because this is another game where, even though it's an upset, the way USC played needs to be just as much of the story as Oregon waiting as long as they did to surge back.
Absolutely.
And I mean, if you look at Matt Barkley, it's a career day for him. I mean, that's a 323-yard passing day, 4 touchdowns, 1 interception. And outside of him, I mean, Robert Woods was his normal self with 2 touchdowns, but Marquise Lee is going to be the future of this receiving core. He is unbelievable, and this was a breakout game for a guy that already was coming on strong, but for him to come up with 8 passes for 187 yards and a touchdown, I mean, the story, just as much as it's going to be people wondering why Oregon waited so late to become their explosive selves and turn a 38-14 game into a thriller at the end that they had a chance to tie, yes, that's a big part of this story, but so is the way USC went out in front.
Yeah, and you know what? Oregon wasn't waiting. That defense stepped up. Yeah. When we looked at a dream scenario for USC, and you were talking about the speed of the linebacking core and the ability to slow that offense down, that game plan was drawn up perfectly. Yeah. And yes, in the end, because Oregon got rolling so well, you almost have to say it was an Oregon slow start, but Oregon doesn't slow start at odds, and you have to give a ton of credit to that defense.
Absolutely, and you know, one of the few things we might have gotten right in our prediction around this game, even though we expected an Oregon win, is the difference between Stanford and USC. We were talking about Stanford being a slightly better version of USC, so how is USC going to have a chance in this game? But it was that second level of the defense, and in particular, Hayes Pollard, who we talked about, he had 14 tackles and 2 sacks. Now, people that think that one player can't be the difference between, let's say, a blowout, as Oregon has had on USC the last couple of years, and a close win for USC, that's how big of a difference one player can make, because I would credit Hayes Pollard as much as anyone with why LaMichael James was held to 79 yards and 3.9.
If Shane Scove is healthy, yeah, Stanford might win that game. Right. It could always be one player. You're right. And yet you can't say enough about Matt Barkley. Funny side note, and we're going to talk a little bit about the Heisman Trophy a little later, but I've been reading today that there are some people in the media that won't vote for Barkley because of the sanctions on USC. It's incredible to me that there's anybody out there that's willing to not vote for a kid in 2011 for something that a player at the school did in 2005. That doesn't make any sense to me.
I mean, if there weren't sanctions or if people didn't have that in their head, there'd be a 2-loss team with a player that probably should be right behind Andrew Luck. Because if we're going to credit Andrew Luck with where he is in the Heisman race, yes, USC has a loss to them and that's going to affect it. But if you think about where would Barkley be in the Heisman race if everything was equal, I think he wouldn't be too far behind Luck.
It's a top 10 team in the AP, and if they found a way to beat Oregon again, if that game happened, they'd probably be a top 5 team, especially with the way this year is going. So it's obviously a shame that those sanctions are there, but a huge win for USC nonetheless.
And of course, yeah, from the Oregon side, it's just a heartbreaker, because here you are, you know, you win the turnover battle 3-2. You have more total yards in the end. And again, stats just don't tell the story, because it was what USC was able to do at the beginning to dictate the tempo and the pace. And yes, Oregon is explosive. We know that. And 38-14 against a top 10 team still wasn't enough to keep them from surging back into the game, and it's a missed field goal that doesn't send it to overtime. So it is a heartbreaker in that respect, but this is one of three games, let's say, that were big games for Oregon. You had the first one against LSU, the game against Stanford, and this one, and you go 1-2 in those games, and as heartbreaking as it is, in the end, if you only have a few chances to make statements, you can't afford to lose one like this.
No, especially at home, and especially what was crazy about this game and the Oklahoma game we're about to get to. You know, after you saw what happened to Oklahoma State, you figured these head coaches wouldn't have to say much. Yeah. It's like, look at what happened. Look at what happened to a team that didn't show up and play 100%. All you guys just need to show up here. You know USC is going to be fired up. You know this is their bowl game. You know this is their season. Mm-hmm. Don't let that happen. And sure enough, you come out flat against this team. It's inexcusable. And like you said, especially for a team that comes into the year saying, this is our year, this is our championship year, the LSU game means everything. They put that behind them and realize, hey, we still have a shot. We can get a rematch. We can make amends. Yeah. And then you drop this game.
You said it. They knew they still had a shot. They were shocked after the LSU game because they thought that probably cost them. They knew coming into this game, they were right back in the mix. Their name was being tossed around right at the top of a potential rematch in the national title game. So it wasn't a lack of focus or effort, I don't think. It was just a lack of ability to beat this team on the big stage.
Baylor over Oklahoma, you said, here's another point where you get one point right, because we talked about these two games and we basically said USC and Baylor had no chance, so we were wrong on that, but you did say if Baylor is going to find a way to beat Oklahoma, it's going to be a one-man show. And boy, was it.
I mean, you know, all we can say is it's probably the best performance of any player in college football this season. That's how good Robert Griffin was against Oklahoma. And he had to be, because what sticks out to me in this game is if you look at the two stat lines and you look at what Robert Griffin did with his ridiculous 479 yards, four touchdowns, no interceptions, 72 yards rushing, one of the best performances we've seen all season. On the other end, you have Landry Jones, who threw for 447 yards, but he had no touchdowns.
I still can't figure that out.
No touchdowns, one interception. What does that tell you about Oklahoma's team and Baylor's team? And it was a one touchdown game, and yet Landry Jones doesn't have a touchdown, and it took everything that Robert Griffin had to will his team to a victory. It was a one man show. You know, that's no disrespect to a guy like Kendall Wright, who certainly played his role, but it tells you that one player can will his team if he's that good. If he's as good as Robert Griffin III, you can take an Oklahoma team that's better than you across the board, and you can will your team to a win.
And it's another game that Oklahoma ties up, takes the lead, should just, at that point, put the nail in the coffin, and can't. They couldn't stop the momentum. They couldn't stop this guy. They couldn't put this game away, and they lose for the first time ever against the Baylor Bears. They'd won the previous 20 contests.
Another streak comes to an end.
Another streak comes to an end. And I was thinking after the USC game, or I should say I was thinking after the Oklahoma State loss, I was thinking, okay, if Oklahoma beats Baylor, now can we say that Oklahoma State still deserves to go to the championship if they beat Oklahoma? Because we were going to make that same argument for Oklahoma, even though they lost the ugly one to Texas Tech. I was really looking forward to debating that with you. Oklahoma goes ahead and makes it moot, because now that win doesn't look nearly as good to this Oklahoma team that all of a sudden you just can't really count on.
Yeah, no, it's true. And, you know, despite giving up over 600 yards, 38 points, I actually thought the Baylor defense played better than we thought they would, because they actually created three turnovers and didn't turn it over themselves. I couldn't figure out a way. How is Baylor going to stay in this game with their defense that poor? And could, you know, Robert Griffin, as good as he is, could he will them to it? I'm still stunned. Out of all the games this weekend, for some reason, that's actually the biggest shocker to me.
I agree with you. And what happened, well, for me, it was what happened to Oklahoma's defense. Yeah. You remember when we were looking at that Kansas State game? Now, Colin Klein is no Robert Griffin III, but we knew that it was going to be one guy in that game, and we knew it was going to be one guy in this game. This Oklahoma defense coming into the year was supposed to be one of their strong points. They were known for Landry Jones, Ryan Broyles, and all those guys, but unlike the Oklahoma States of the Big 12, this was the team that had the defense, and it had no answer whatsoever.
It's funny, because the reason they were a preseason number one, I think experts knew how good LSU and Alabama would be on defense, but the difference between those teams and Oklahoma and why they got the number one ranking is they did have the explosive offense to go with.
They were supposed to be a top 10 defense,
so
potentially.
It's amazing to see this defense fall apart to the degree that they did. If you look at that game, Bob Stoops was even looking and wondering, how is it that our secondary let guys run right by them? At the halftime, I remember Aaron Andrews interviewing him. He was just livid with one safety that kept making the same mistake over and over. It's one of those things where that's not what we've come to expect out of Oklahoma. They may lose big games, but to lose in that fashion for a second time this season, it is out of character even for his team. So,
and you know, Clemson, they had an outside shot. It wasn't much of one, but we were talking about their resume, and they were the team in the ACC that if this sort of weekend happened, they could benefit from it, and instead they go ahead and drop one to NC State.
Yeah, and you know, there are certain programs that you just say, and this is the worst title you can have. It's that whole proverbial Clemson being Clemson thing.
Yes.
And we've tried to avoid saying that because we didn't want to, but the reality is it's this game, even above the Georgia Tech game, that you go, there is an example of Clemson being Clemson, because with all due respect to NC State, and Mike Glennon, the quarterback, had a great effort, but you cannot lose a game like this, even with Sammy Watkins out. Taj Boyd's been great at not turning the ball over. He had two picks in this one. They had no help from the running game. They looked like a team that thought they had the Atlantic Division wrapped up and that's all they cared about, and they came out so flat, and coming out flat against anybody on the road, even a team like NC State, 37-13 is what you get, and it's just a team that we've wanted to get over the hump. We wanted this team to be good way back when we were talking about the one-loss teams and who we wanted, and even when they were undefeated, what undefeated team do we like the most? Clemson. They've done it to us again, where how many times can we give this team the benefit of the doubt before they let us down?
And now that South Carolina game, talk about two teams that we've spent our share of time on here on Running the Option. That game was looking like a potential, you know, who's going to go into that game with national championship implications, and now all of a sudden it's who can get to 10 wins, and you know, Clemson can obviously still win the ACC, but obviously not the way they wanted to finish. So